Hello, I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan.
And we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your weekly Ninja Turtle podcast that covers the Ninja Turtle comic books one deep dish issue at a time. I went there.
I figured you would.
How have you been, Sean?
Good. I read something turtle related that wasn't a comic. Bought this whole
turtle related that was okay. I had to think about that for a second. Yeah. I've been working like crazy lately. Like my brain is fried. So, what was it that was turtle related that wasn't a comic?
So I read Teenage Ninja to Mutant Turtle by Ken Scott, and I always knew there were multiple people involved with the turtle, like portraying the turtles in the 90s movies, but I always thought it was the person doing the voice and then the person in the suit. And Ken Scott worked on the original movie. He was the stunt Raphael, so he did most of the stunt work for that, and he did a lot of foot soldier stunts. And then in Secret of the Ooze, he got himself bumped up to actor Raphael, so that's actually him doing all the acting portion in Secret of the Ooze. But it was a really cool read. I really recommend it. It's funny to have somebody's firsthand experience with how small those movies really were considered at the time, like production wise. And
that, so I'm assuming that was just like a regular book. It wasn't like a comic.
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. It's just, yeah, okay. Just a normal old book with just some words. So. But no, it was cool, so it's worth checking out.
Yeah, I haven't been doing a whole lot of turtle-related reading. I started reading Atomic Robo again, which every time I read Atomic Robo, I'm always like, this is so much like Hellboy. It's like, I almost like wonder if I should like it as much as I do. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, is this just store brand Hellboy? Should I just go read Hellboy? But I like it. It's good stuff.
I feel like they're different enough.
And they just have like the same vibe, right, as the kids today would say.
Okay.
The stories are also told kind of the same way in that they're all over the place timeline-wise. Like each story is from like a different era.
True.
And what else do they have? Like a lot of the art kind of looks similar.
Which company is Atomic Robo?
Oh, I don't know. It's Red Circle, I think.
Okay.
It's not a big publisher, whoever it is. Yeah. Well, it was done by somebody. I don't know too much about the background of it, but I know the guy who makes Atomic Robo made like web comics.
Okay.
And then I guess he segued into Atomic Robo somehow. I don't know. I don't even know if it's still going. I think it's over. But it's a good series. I highly recommend it to anyone listening who hasn't.
I'm kind of surprised. Robo. Unless there's been projects for it that just never went anywhere. I'm just surprised nothing's come out of it as far as a series or anything like that.
Yeah, everything's going to be a series now. Except Spawn. We're never going to see that movie.
I completely forgot about that movie.
It's not coming. Wasn't Spike Lee supposed to direct it at some point?
I don't know. I thought Todd McFarlane was going to direct it too. The last thing I remember was...
That was another one, but like there was like a hot second where they said Spike Lee was going to direct Spawn.
Last thing I ever remember...
Obviously, that's not going to happen.
...hearing about it was that Jamie Foxx was going to be Spawn and that the cops were going to be like the main characters.
That would be cool.
But yeah, you're right. I don't know what happened with that. It just disappeared.
Well, speaking of the bad boy of Image Comics, we're talking Image Turtles today, and we're keeping the train rolling. We're moving into double digits.
Yeah.
10. Issue number 10. Story is untitled. The cover artist is Frank Fosco. Story, Gary Carlson. It's pretty much the same lineup this whole like Image run. It's very consistent. There's a few changes here and there. Yeah. But pencils are still Frank Fosco. Ink's still Andrew Pepoy. Lettering, Chrysalopoulos. They had a turtle team over there.
Which helps a lot, really, when you're trying to do a monthly book, so.
Yeah. That's probably how. I mean, I've noticed there are a few cracks here, but not nearly as much as Mirage. It's like there'll be like 1 month missing. And I feel like that's probably just like there were 5 weeks in the previous month. You know what I mean? Or something. Because we did have 1 month that doubled up, which we haven't had since. But I don't know. Every now and then they'll miss a month, but not nearly like Mirage's
4 months
gone, 5 months gone. Like,
yeah, we still have a comic. Oh.
So this comic, the cover date is July 1997. So let's go take a look back at July of 1997. Hop in the Wayback Machine here and have a look-see. This month in entertainment. The movies that were released in July 97. We've got Princess Mononoke,
which was
an anime that I remember was very popular at the time.
I feel like that was the beginning of that becoming more of a thing where they would release those theatrically here.
I don't know. Again, this is off Movie Phone, and they definitely list stuff that wasn't theatrical. So I'm not sure that was a theatrical release. I'm just mentioning anything notable that came out about that time.
I remember that being a big thing.
Good Burger also came out July 97. That's a movie with a cult following. I know for the longest time, the DVD or the VHS? It might have been both. Were like one of those valuable DVDs because it was out of print and people were selling like Good Burger DVDs for like $100. But I'm sure that went down now that it's on Paramount Plus.
I would think so. I'm not saying do it.
Because it was the only way to watch the movie. Like, before streaming, it was like, if you wanted it, you had to pay these crazy prices.
I'm not saying do it, but I'm surprised they haven't done a legacy sequel.
There was that movie Snow Day, which I know went through a lot of different versions. I know it was originally... you know what? Snow Day might have been before Good Burger. I can't tell. But it was another Nickelodeon movie. And I know at one point it was supposed to be the Adventures of Pete and Pete movie.
Aww.
And they didn't do that because I think they were too old. And then it became... And then I think at some point it was also supposed to be with the guys from Good Burger, but it playing different characters. And then it just wound up being whatever Snow Day is. But that was another early Nickelodeon movie.
I want a Pete and Pete movie now.
Oh, yeah. That would have been amazing. Or how about they just give us the third season? Release that. Because I don't know if you read about it, but nobody knows what happened there. They literally say that there's a warehouse somewhere with Pete and Pete season 3 DVDs because they literally say they went to print and then last minute they decided not to release it. Which is like what probably happened, and they don't want to admit this. This is my theory. Because Pete and Pete has a lot of crazy music rights things going on. I'll bet last minute they realized that they didn't have the rights to something that was in there and were like, we can't release this or we're going to have to pay a settlement.
Oh, music rights ruin everything.
Contact also came out this month, in the same month as the comic book.
I don't remember that being...
George of the Jungle?
George of the Jungle another was one. Good. Contact was okay.
Here's a movie that you and I love, but I don't know if our listeners will be familiar with it. Nothing to Lose came out the month of this comic book.
There's a spider.
There's a spider on your head.
That's a great movie.
That's all I remember. You know what? I actually remember quite... Now, this is crazy because I haven't seen that movie since like probably 1998 because it was on VHS at the time. We didn't see it in theaters.
Yeah.
And I remember the plot pretty well, actually. So who's the main character, the actor's name?
I know who it is, and oh man, he was Ian in High Fidelity. Tim Robbins.
Yep. Tim Robbins, yes. So Tim Robbins comes home and he thinks he caught his wife in bed with another man. So he goes on this crazy adventure where he's like, the title of the movie, I've Got Nothing to Lose. And what do they do though? That's the part I don't remember. He meets his friend Martin Lawrence.
I don't remember why they team up.
Can't remember why they're friends either. Oh, I think he steals his car.
Maybe.
Right? I think he steals his car and Martin Lawrence stays in the car. And then they go on a crazy adventure because he's got nothing to lose. Anyway, turns out, twist ending, it wasn't actually his wife in bed with another guy. Neither of them were the people he thought it was. It was his brother in bed with his brother's wife. For some reason, they were going at it at his house. Yeah. But I like that movie. I should watch that again as an adult. I'm sure it's got plenty of problematic humor in it.
Yeah, I gotta see if that's on anything because I haven't seen that in ages.
Operation Condor came out this month as well. Jackie Chan vehicle.
Okay.
Although he was already pretty big at this point. Air Force One.
Yeah. Get off my plane.
Nothing like Han Solo. Yeah, telling you to get off his plane.
I like when you go back and watch that stuff now, and it's like, oh, it's Han Solo punching Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah. And then the big movie for July was Men in Black.
Yep.
Which I've always said should have been our generation's Ghostbusters. Like, it's such a shame what became of that franchise and Will Smith's career in general, but we won't go there. But it's so, like, so rife with potential. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't even have to make it the same two agents every time. Like, just do two different agents if you can't get Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones and do a completely different... That's a franchise where you could have infinity different ideas. Anything's possible. And yet, for some reason, there's years between each movie.
I still haven't seen the last one they made that I know neither one of them were in it, but yeah, like you said, that should have been, I mean, not that everything needs to, but
I own it because I got it in a set digitally on Vudu. It's like all the Men in Black movies in one. And as I'm watching the different comic book movies, I'm going to watch it when I get to it timeline wise. So I'll let you know.
Because, I mean, that movie is Deadshot and Two-Face trying to stop Wilson Fisk. And Master Splinter gets shot in the face.
Oh yeah. So the music of July of 97, some hot summer tunes. Let's see what we were listening to. So from June all the way to August, the number one song was I'll Be Missing You by Puff Daddy, Puff Daddy and Faith Evans featuring 112.
All right.
It spent 11 weeks at number one. So that was the old I Miss Biggie song. And the Nintendo Power cover was Star Fox 64. Says Shake, Rumble, and Roll. I think they were going in with the Rumble Pack thing here.
Is that the game that came with it?
It came packaged with it, yeah. And funny tidbit, GoldenEye, originally one of the ideas they toyed with for GoldenEye was to change your clip in the game. You would disconnect the Rumble Pack and reconnect it. But they said it got to be too cumbersome. But that sounded like a cool idea.
That is interesting. I know that, what is it, the PS5 has the adaptive controller that does like feedback stuff.
Yeah, I haven't actually used one yet, so I don't know.
I haven't either.
I know that Star Fox 64 was the last good Star Fox game. I'll die on that hill all day.
I thought the GameCube one was okay, but I don't remember anything about it.
The Dinosaur Adventure one?
Is that what that one was?
Yeah, it actually started off life as a different game, and then they just
slapped a Star Fox skin
over it.
Okay.
It's a very Zelda Star Fox game. Like, it's a very Zelda game, that game.
Interesting.
TV events. July 12th, Oz premiered on HBO.
That show was that long ago? Wow.
According to my research, which I do very quickly and haphazardly, July 14th, Johnny Bravo premieres on Cartoon Network.
that was that old?
Yes. I thought it was older, to tell you the truth, but yeah.
Wow.
July 24th, George Harrison's final television appearance, where he promotes his friend Harvey Shankar's new album.
I didn't even know. Wow, okay. Something I wasn't even aware of.
You didn't know what?
I didn't know that he had had a television appearance.
Oh, no, it wasn't like he didn't know it was his last appearance. It was because he passed away.
Yeah, but
he just never was able to do television again.
I was going
to
say, I thought it was the early 2000s he passed away, but...
Well, it could have been. I'm just saying, this day in 97 was the last time he was on TV. I don't think he made, like, an event out of it. He wasn't like, this is the last time I'm going to be on TV. Like, he didn't know it was coming. So that's why you don't know. July 27th, Stargate SG-1 premieres on Showtime, which, if we're going to talk about things we didn't know, I didn't know that was a Showtime show.
I always thought that was just a sci-fi show.
Yeah, me too. And then the last TV event I have, July 28th, Win Ben Stein's Money premieres on Comedy Central, a show that I watched back-to-back episodes of almost every day of summer vacation because that was all that was on. I watched so much Win Ben Stein's Money while I would, like... So, Sean knows this. Our listeners don't know. When I would go visit my grandparents, I was lucky enough to be able to have cable TV on the TV, and then I had a little tiny television. It was one of those TVs that have like a built-in VCR. It was probably like a 12-inch screen.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe smaller. And I would hook up a video game system to that. And so I'd basically like watch Win Ben Stein's Money while playing Nintendo 64. And I went outside and stuff too. But but that was my sweet setup back in the day.
I remember that. They ever try to do that with Saturday DVD Night players? Live. Did they what? Ever try to do it like TVs that size with DVD players?
I think they did.
Okay.
They should make a Blu-ray one. Maybe they did. I don't know.
You're Mr. Digital. What do you care?
Less clutter. Saturday Night Live. There's no Saturday Night Live, so let's go to Conan O'Brien. Some notable guests he had that month were Paul McCartney, Martin Short, David Alan Grier, Adam West, Martin Sheen, and Kevin Bacon. And the only two musical guests I recognized were Sugar Ray and Primus.
Ah, Primus. Yeah. What are they up to?
I have no idea. That was always one of those bands that I wanted to get into, but never really could. I listened to that Sailing... I can't even think of the name of the album. The Cheese album. The one with Jerry Was a Race Car Driver on it. Like, yeah. I know every song on that album. And then past that, I don't know their stuff at all. Maybe I'll listen tomorrow.
Kind of forgot they were a band.
So. They might not be. I don't know. Primus. Get at us. Tell us what you're up to.
Tweet us.
Come on the show. Talk about Ninja Turtles with us.
That'd be amazing.
You won't remember you did it anyway. All right, Sean, tell us where this comic book is available.
So you can find this on Comixology and in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends Volume 1.
Urban Legends. And because it's Urban Legends, there's two different covers. There's the Urban Legends cover and the original cover. Yeah. I don't know. Which one do you want to talk about first?
So the Urban Legends cover is terrible.
You know, it's funny I brought up Atomic Robo earlier because I feel like whichever turtle this is supposed to be closest to the reader kind of looks like Atomic Robo on the cover here. He has like the same weird mouth. It's the two of them in trench coats. That's got to be Michelangelo because you can kind of see the scarring on Raph's face there. The two turtles are standing facing the reader with a Chicago train going by in the background. Spider-Man is not trying to stop it because he's in New York.
I was just surprised like how uninteresting and dull a cover it was. Whereas the original cover is pretty cool.
Yeah, the original cover, you got Savage Dragon armed to the teeth like he always is, even though that never really happens in this comic, I don't think.
No.
with the four turtles in front of him. And Raphael's got a full Wolverine claw look going on. He's definitely going for that look.
I've seen a lot of like people on Twitter like uploading their versions of Raph holding the size like this, and it's cool, but I don't remember him really doing that like much.
I think in our season one logo, I told them to draw one of your Psy like that. It's the thing that's making it different is they keep drawing them like three knives. That's the way I keep describing it. So I'll continue that way. Whereas it's not supposed to be like that, but that is, I nerded out here. So when I had them do the art for our first season artwork, I looked at there's a thing called the Ninja Turtle. They made four of these, the Ninja Turtle Guide to they use. And I looked at the Ninja Turtle Guide to Psy, and it gives actual like martial arts instructions and stuff. And it talks about it breaks it all down. And one of them is holding a Psy that way. I can't remember right. Oh, I remember why. So when you hold the Psy like Wolverine, and you've got the three prongs coming out from in between your knuckles. I'm trying to describe it this way for our listeners. You can see me. So when you got the three things coming out between your knuckles, what that does is the handle of the Psy is going down your, what would you call this part of your arm?
Yeah.
You know, your wrist. Okay. and down your forearm. So what that does is you can use that now to block a sword attack.
Okay.
So you use that hand to block and the other hand to attack.
Oh, all right.
So, at least that's what the book told me. Yeah,
because it's a defensive weapon. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Do it right, though, or you're going to get your arm sliced off.
Stab yourself.
Going to go Luke Skywalker if you get it wrong. So we open this issue with Donatello. He has traveled to Chicago, where his brothers are investigating vampire sightings they heard about in the local news. We saw that at the end of last issue. And in his narration, Donnie's talking about how his armor, his new computer armor, never sleeps. And he's bigger, faster, stronger, and smarter than before. He's a whole
devil. I thought it was funny that he mentions, you know, even if I'm asleep, the armor knows what's going on. It's like, well, that's not true because you lost Casey when you were following him that other issue because you fell asleep. So
does he? Let me look. I thought he just, I only picked up on him saying like, oh, I can sleep while the armor does the work. Does he say he knows what's going on? It says, I slept all the way from New York to Midway City, yet I'm aware. Yeah, I'm aware of everything that happened during the journey.
So
okay, so you're right.
Just when he's staking out,
I miss that.
It doesn't work as well.
Well, maybe he updated I'm gonna headcanon that he updated the software so that now when it's asleep, it keeps records. I don't know what he'd want record of for this journey.
I was gonna say, was he playing the alphabet game by himself against the armor?
Yeah, I spy with my little robot eye. So he sneaks up, he gets to Chicago, he sneaks up and surprises Leonardo, who's trying to fix what's left of the Triceraton air car that was stripped last issue. And he sneaks up behind him, says, "What the hell did you do to my air car?" and scares him. After the shock, Leo, he like tears the blueprints in half, which I thought was a really cool frame here. Donatello basically says, "We don't need no stinking plans." When he, Leo's like, "You made me rip these when you scared me." And he's like, "We don't need those." And then I like this part where he says, "It's tool time." Definitely dates the issue. Definitely was a Home Improvement reference at the time because we've talked about in past episodes, that was like one of the top TV shows at the time, ratings wise. So it's tool time, and Donatello goes to town fixing the car. He's using parts that Leonardo was able to retrieve from the thieves they were with. They were, you know, breaking up last issue, and some parts that the Night Watchman had in his garage.
Because, you know, he just has stuff lying around, apparently.
Yeah. Alien, you know, stuff that, like we said before, is compatible with alien technology. Meanwhile, the Savage Dragon, he's in this issue, is being interviewed by TV reporter Roxanne Wells at the scene of a murder. She's questioning our dragon friend here about a rash of vampire victims being found. Vampire quotes throughout Midway City.
I feel like it carries in the next issue too. They feel like Savage Dragon comics that the Turtles just happened to be in, which was kind of jarring to me because I didn't take the time to do any research on Savage Dragon. So I have not read any Savage Dragon, so I don't know if he's supposed to have powers.
Oh, okay.
But I like what they do with the world building, where at least you get that in Chicago, unlike New York, mutated freak people are pretty normal. Like, it's not a big thing. So
yeah. Yeah, which I think this was their attempt to like fold the Ninja Turtles into Image universe more and make it seem more like the Marvel or DC universe, where everything's interchanging. You know, the Young Bloods show up in Savage Dragon a lot too, and Spawn. I'm sure Spawn and him crossed over at some point. I don't know.
Is the Circle off the top of my head, bad guy group?
I think so. See, that's what I love about Savage Dragon, though. It's funny. Savage Dragon, the premise is almost like, what if all the X-Men lived in Chicago? That's basically his comic. What if every mutant in the world was in one city?
So I liked that element. It was... It's almost a precursor to IDW a little bit with Mutant Town and things like that. So it's kind of cool to see that of all places, Image is where that kind of started.
Well, it's funny too. Like, I have a weird relationship with Savage Dragon, where he's such an obscure comic book character that I'm sure a lot of people aren't familiar with him. And in my neighborhood growing up, for some reason, we had a lot of Savage Dragon comics. I think, you know, when you're, if you happen to grow up in a neighborhood where there's lots of kids, whatever the oldest kids are into are what's cool. So, like, there were the kids in my neighborhood that were like, I don't know, like maybe 5 years older than us, which would at this time make them like 13 years old. So, perfect age to be reading Image comics. And they had a ton of Savage Dragon comics. And I think that's why to this day I've always been like very curious. But every time I've tried to read his series, it's very crazy. Okay. And I've heard some not so great things about stuff that's appeared in it over the years. But like, I don't know. I don't think that's every writer. So, I mean, obviously every comic book has had some problematic stuff pop up from time to time, even the Turtles. So I'm not going to just like write all of Savage Dragon off because I heard of these handful of characters, but, it's definitely something I've always wanted to dive deeper into. I like the art. I like this whole look. I like that he's a cop. He kind of makes the nobody character redundant if they're going to interact with him because he's a cop
dead,
superhero.
So it's okay.
It's true. And he ain't coming back until they reboot him as a different character altogether.
Give him a lot more to do.
So Savage Dragon, he ends his interview here, and I wonder who these could be. Two trench
it's just
coat,
their go-to
fishing hat wearing trench coat wearing guys approach Savage Dragon, and immediately, like you said, he's like, you don't need the disguises here in Chicago. There's freaks all over the place. I'm surprised you didn't see 20 of them on your way here. And they lose the disguise. after they take those disguises off, Savage Dragon leads them over to the corpse that he was looking at, doing his cop work there, because he is a cop. And they point out that the body's been drained of not just blood, but its very life force,
which
has been drained.
Results in some pretty funky corpse images.
Yeah, you get the whole stretcher pulling the white sheet back, and it's looks like a zombie. Kind of.
I like this moment too, where just to clarify it, you know, because the image books do this. He's like, "Oh, I spoke with Galahad. Neither one of us think that Splinter is involved." So it's like, okay, well, you guys could just leave Chicago then.
Yeah, but they got stuff to do. And that's basically what happens, is right here they're like, all right, we don't need to be involved, but Raphael, he wants to go off on his own adventure. So they go hit the local go-go club, and Michelangelo, who's with him, is basically like, this isn't my thing. I'm going to go do something else. And Raphael goes into this club with some dancing girls, we'll say.
And some freaks.
Lots of freaks in the club, yes. Including a bird. Who does not like that Raphael has one eye for some reason.
I think it was just a...
He walks up to him and he's like, what's so funny, one eye? Because he was laughing at this thing on the wall here.
I'm sorry. I don't like you either.
Yeah, very, very Star Wars.
I like how this chicken guy's name's Powerhouse. So yeah, you get a cantina fight basically going on now.
And but before that fight gets going into full force, what we'll see in a minute is so we just see Raphael kind of standing up about to fight, and then it goes over to Michelangelo knock knock knocking on a door, and you can see that he's nervous, and he says oh, I must be crazy coming here, what was I thinking, and nobody's home, better leave. And then a goyle answers
lizard,
the door. Sean,
lizard goyle,
a mutant girl.
I just
I don't know
went
what
with
she's
a lizard.
Supposed to be. I guess she could. She's a pointy lizard. She's got a tail. But yeah, this is very Mutant Town vibes here. Like, I keep using the word vibes. I got to stop that. But this is very much what Mutant Town feels like in the current comics. And the girl lets him in, and we should say it's Sarah from the Savage Dragon comics, who they met on a previous adventure, and Michelangelo has brought her flowers.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice moment, actually.
Yeah, and they honestly are kind of perfect for each other, because she's kind of the goofball of the, they call their team the Freak Force, and she's kind of the Freak Force goofball, so they're very much good for each other. And then we do some more cutting. We cut over to April in New York City, back at her apartment. And this is exactly what I was saying when we were at the end of the last issue, or a few issues, like two issues ago, when they resolved the kidnapping story. And I said, well, good thing they know exactly where she lives, because they kidnapped her from there. So what this scene is this guy is knocking on April's door, trying to get information on where Shadow is, because he's working for the mob family that kidnapped her to begin with. And April tells Shadow to go hide. There's not a whole lot that happens in this. It's just two pages.
The moment I do like is that Shadow has like an escape route through the sewer to go to Uncle Leo's, and it's, I don't know, it's a cool little detail.
Yep. And then Leonardo and Donatello are flying around Chicago in the newly redesigned air car.
Morning.
And they see Savage Dragon interrogating some supervillains. And the dragon gets tough with these criminals and their leader, who, you know, it's a big old fight scene. But before they can react, Donatello lands the vehicle and the brothers offer their friend a hand. The villains are kind of making fun of the turtles there.
So the thing I've noticed about Savage Dragon is the names for things are unimaginative but hilarious. So the guy he's trying to get information out of is Cyberface.
Which is funny because his face is kind of the only part of him that's not cybernetic. He's got a regular human face. Cyber, and the rest of him's
cyber
a robot.
Legs doesn't have the same kind of ring to it.
So Donatello fires a big old blast with his Mega Man laser arm, and the villains all scatter. They run away. So, but as they run away, they promise Savage Dragon that they will. He's gonna pay for this. Like, you know, that's what villains do. You'll pay for this.
You'll
that's what
you rue say the away. Day.
Dragon doesn't seem too concerned.
I mean, would you really be that worried if Cyberface is threatening you?
So then Roxanne Wells, the TV reporter, suddenly appears and tells Savage Dragon that she's been able to link the killings. So she's from, apparently she's a detective now too.
I feel the like side. The way she's portrayed is almost like she just follows him around and then comes into frame when she has something important to tell him.
Well, it's just interesting that she like went over there as if she was a fellow police officer.
I love the name. Know?
But she's got a lot of details here, which she discovered. I don't know if this was covered in Savage Dragon's issue that month. Maybe I should research that. But it seems like all of this was uncovered off panel. We didn't see any of it. But apparently a already prosecuted murderer named Johnny Lee Reburn was sent voluntarily into space on an exploration mission to avoid a harsher sentence, and the ship lost contact with the Earth, and everyone thought the crew was lost, but the victims of this vampire were all involved in Reburn's trial. So there's a link here. It's like, hey, all these people that are dying, they were all testifying against this guy. So Wells believes that Reburn has somehow returned from space and is seeking vengeance. This sounds ridiculous when I say it. she basically thinks it's a revenge plot by this character that we don't know about and have never seen. Savage Dragon is like, hey, sure, that makes a lot of sense. Donatello and Roxanne all jump into the air car.
Yeah.
Like it's an Archie comic.
Let's go get some burgers.
Yeah, they're going to go pick up Jughead. And they jump into the air car and head over to the apartment of the judge who presided over the case. And when they arrive, they see a gigantic robot monster draining the life out of said judge. And I love this. This is the best page in the issue. It's such good art. It's got them. So I love that you can see them in the background. They're looking in like a first story window, I think. And doesn't matter. They're in an air car. But either way, they're in the background. You can see them looking through the window. And then this guy definitely looks inspired by Superman comics here. Like, this is definitely like a Brainiac.
He reminded me of...
I mean,
I know his name's 90s. Deathwatch, but he reminded me of Deathlok from Marvel.
Oh, yeah, that too. I mean, 90s comics had this very, what's the word I'm looking for when everything's the same? Very, what's that word? Uniform. 90s comics had like a very uniform look for all their cyborg characters. You always have these parts with these like metal tubes, I guess you could say, cylinders that run throughout everything.
They always get skull faces.
And they always have like a weird skull face and like the skull teeth. Yeah. A lot of cyborg characters look like this guy, but it's still cool.
I think he stands out actually more than his Marvel and DC counterparts.
If only the comic were more popular. Both Turtles and Savage Dragon.
I am wondering if like he ever came back in Savage Dragon, because he's an interesting villain. And I like the idea of...
Find out on our Savage Dragon podcast coming next year. Well, we go through every issue of Savage Dragon, one issue at a time.
I like the idea of a space program created to put, like, death row inmates into space voluntarily. Like,
yeah. Hey, you think you can breathe on Mars? I don't know. Send a bunch of send a bunch of convicts up there. We'll see if you can breathe on Mars.
It's just such a crazy, like, it's Con Air in space, basically, is all it is.
That's like the Escape from New York level sequel, where the sequel to Con Air is they're in space and then they crash the space shuttle and they get out on an alien planet and start
Nicolas
causing trouble.
Cage, if you listen to the show, please, we need this.
There's a casino on the moon for some reason. They
yeah,
it was a casino in Con
Air,
right?
A plane, I'm not mixing things.
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. But yeah, this is a pretty cool issue. A lot of good art going on. Really cool Brainiac villain at the end here. So, what was your title for the issue, since these are all untitled?
So, since we're in Chicago, I went with Deep Dish Death Watch.
Ooh, nice. I like it. I almost went with a deep dish title, but I couldn't come up with one. So I definitely give you kudos for being able to come up with a deep dish pun. I went with, and I'm kind of proud of this, I would title this issue The City of Big Shoulders, because I don't know if you know this, but that's a nickname for Chicago. Ooh. Chicago is the city of big shoulders. And
big shoulders.
Savage Dragon... has gigantic shoulders.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. And
it's also the Windy City and all that other stuff, but City of Big Shoulders is one of those.
Oddly,
nicknames.
I only gave it a 3.8 because the Savage Dragon stuff was confusing at times to me. But I mean, that's...
Yeah, this doesn't... I had a lower score, too. I just went with 3 out of 5 because I was feeling lazy. But, like, I didn't, like, try to figure out how much above or below 3 it was. But I agree. It suffers from, you know, what a lot of the MCU is starting to suffer from, in my opinion, is too much connectiveness. And like you said, it feels more like a Savage Dragon comic that the Turtles are in, which... You know, if whoever's name is on the book should still feel like the focus, unless you're telling a big, you know, a big story arc that's spanning like 7 or 8 issues or something. Then I could see you just being like, all right, this is just the next issue and that. But this isn't that. This is just like a two-part thing.
And the reason it stuck out to me is more because this run is so focused on kind of recapping what's going on. Because even in this one, Donnie kind of goes over like the story a little bit about what happened to him. So I feel like they could have just had little blurbs on the page or something, like, you know, first appearance Savage Dragon, blah, blah, or whatever for some of the characters. Like, if you wanted to know more about the Chicken Man.
Yeah, it is shockingly absent of those. Those things are shockingly absent. And it's... Part of me makes me wonder, maybe they're in the original, because I'm reading the same Urban Legends copy as you. And, like, maybe IDW just isn't putting them there. Because now they're on IDW comics. I don't know. But yeah, it should fill you in more on these things, like, you know, Sarah, who Michelangelo's hanging out with, it could have just been like they, because they did it before,
so
for the Watchmen, when they were like,
that's what
they
I mean,
met in
they
this
don't do that,
comic.
And it's weird.
And they should, at bare minimum, do it when Michelangelo goes to visit Sarah. because I could totally see people being like, who the heck is this? Like, it takes an extra step of thinking to be like, oh, that must be a Savage Dragon. If you don't read Savage Dragon and you only read Turtles, there would be an extra layer of thinking there where this must be a Savage Dragon character that they previously crossed over with. Because the interaction, yeah. He clearly knows yep. She lives there and was going to visit her. But other than that, you get nothing. You're like, who is this person? She's never been in a Turtle comic before.
I give them credit, though, for at least putting in a line to explain why they don't even address Splinter. Like, oh, it actually has nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
You're actually here because we want you on this adventure. So, that is the show, it sounds like. You got any more thoughts on this comic?
I enjoyed it. I know Savage Dragon crossed with the Turtles all the way back in issue 2 for his book, which still impresses me. Like, you're on your second book.
Yeah, and that was before the Turtles were on Image. That, like, they were still on Mirage back then, which is probably why they had to keep a lot of the same continuity going, because they had already crossed over with some of their in-continuity characters.
It makes you kind of want to see other Turtle Image crossovers.
Yeah, there's nothing saying they can't do it again.
I'd read Casey Jones and...
Except crossovers have kind of gone... Well, no, because they did the Batman
one. Yeah, I don't feel like they're as prevalent as they used to be. But I'd read a Casey Jones and Spawn, like, one shot or something.
Yeah, that would be cool. Casey would be a little afraid of him, I think.
I don't know. It depends which version of Casey it is, because sometimes he'll just stupidly run
That's
in.
That's true. So. Maybe too drunk to notice. So thank you, everyone, for listening. We very much appreciate it. Thank you for keeping this show alive and giving us a reason to keep doing it. So it's so cool to see the numbers going up and see that people are listening to our podcast.
You know what I'm noticing about Death Watch now, too? He has two sets
What's
of
that?
Upper teeth.
Well, maybe he really likes eating. Maybe he really likes eating stuff that's hard to chew. I think that's just the lighting. I don't think he has two. I don't think that's a second set of upper teeth. I think that's like his the bone in between his nose and teeth. We'll find out next issue. Stay tuned. Listen to us next week. We'll be back
records.
Then. If you want to see all the visual stuff we talked about this week, go follow our Twitter and our Instagram at TMNTNerds. We've got an email address if you want to get a hold of us, TMNTNerds@gmail.com. And as always, leave a like.
Oh, please.
Leave a review. Leave a like. Like our Twitter stuff, I guess. I don't know. You don't like a podcast.
You suffer.
But leave
podcast.
A review. Give us a 5-star up there. And subscribe, please. So, thank you very much. We'll see you next week.